Band coming up next on freakradio.org at 101.1 FM. It's the July 5th edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned. And that was Downtown Dave on his album Downtown David. David Myers. Maive? Oh, my. He's hard to read his handwriting. Eve Wagner on violin. Matthew Hartle on piano. And, well, we're going to have to wait till we get him in the studio. He's still around town. Maybe I'll ask David to come on the show to play directly. I like his stuff. It's usually I play stuff that is more concerned with specific homeless or political topics, because I'm concerned with those primarily on the show. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides you're listening to. And my name is Robert Norse. And, of course, you're tuned, as mentioned before, to 101.1 FM. Or broadcasting, or streaming, I should say, as well, at freakradio.org, in case you want to check us out there. These shows are archived at Huff, H-U-F-F, santacruz.org. And a couple of upcoming announcements. The show also has a longer edition on Sundays, and I'll be here at 9:30, probably breaking into Thomas Levitt's The Wake Up Call, waking him up, or breaking him up, or something, as I often do. He has a two-hour show from 7:30 to 9:30, and I sometimes come slipping into the studio in the middle of his show to kind of provide a little counterpoint and expand my domain. He actually has similar interests. He's concerned about restoring civil rights for poor people in Santa Cruz, as I am. So it's an interesting time. If you're interested in that subject, that's an interesting time for you to tune in. And again, that's 7:30 to 9:30 on Sunday morning. It's The Wake Up Call, followed by the long edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which is 9:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And at 10 o'clock on Sunday, during my show, we're going to have a debate between Mike Rotkin, former mayor and current council member, member of the Public Safety Committee, and Jillian Greenside, co-founder, or perhaps even founder, of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women way back in the early 80s, currently blackballed from that commission by city council members who apparently, although they haven't said this, she feels they are made uncomfortable by her critique of the city council's essentially non-response or muted response or inadequate response to the fact that the recent figures showing that rape rates in Santa Cruz are skyrocketing while they're dropping in other cities. They're four times the state average, and the number of arrests for rape has dropped to 13% of the cases, down from a state average of 30 or 40%, and actually a higher Santa Cruz average. And there are different explanations for this, and we'll be hearing different explanations, and that'll be happening on Sunday, 10 o'clock in the morning. You'll be able to call in and ask questions of either Jillian or Mike, Jillian Greenside or Mike Rotkin, and who knows, maybe we can squeeze a few other issues out of Mike Rotkin, who is currently on the Santa Cruz City Council. I often call him the shadow mayor, although Jillian feels that Smiley Riley, the titular mayor, and I'm not making a nasty sexual innuendo here, but I'm in fact talking about her title. A titular mayor. She's the one who actually has the name of the office in front of her name. Emily Riley is the mayor, but she doesn't often cut off Councilmember Rotkin, and he often seems to be, as with former mayor Matthews, calling the shots, leading the show, orchestrating the band, whatever you want to call it, running the racket. Anyway, Rotkin will be on the air. Racket Master Rotkin? I don't know. Racketeer Rotkin? No. Anyway, I used to call him Riot Act Rotkin because he was always the one who would push for arrests at city council or evictions or expulsions, because he felt that interruptions of the city council's peculiar process, or even any transgressing of their edicts, however unconstitutional their edicts might be in terms of the right of some people to speak at city council and others not to speak at all, that you are supposed to follow authority in all things. He doesn't, of course, say this. He just acts this way. But that's not neither here nor there. We'll see if the authorities he support, to wit the police department, can explain themselves through him, their spokesperson, on the issue of rape on Sunday at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. We'll see what happens there. Tune in. and it'll be archived in case you can't tune in. You can always call in, too, as you can call into this show. 427-3772 is the phone number here. And I'm going to be running a number of things today. Assuming I can get this properly queued up. One thing I have, let me make sure it's here. And I think what we may have to do is cue a little, instead of music, how about a little something, however vanilla in its content. It has a kind of a bouncy quality to it, and it seems to be sort of contemporary, what with the Libby commutation of sentence that Fuhrer Bush did the other day. You know, he's the chief of staff of the vice president who was convicted of perjury, obstruction of justice, and one other count, and sentenced a couple years in the Huskow. But no, not according to Uncle George. He's not going to have to go there. Let's hear a little something from the Capitol steps.
My fellow Americans, it's time for me to have an important conversation with my most trusted advisor. He's my friend. He's my conscience. He explains things to me when I don't understand them. And let's face it, that's a not small portion of the time. He's the one that taught me that FEMA is not a bone in the human leg. He explained to me that an HMO is not someone who's attracted to men. Y'all probably know him as Shooter. He's my Vice President, Dick Cheney.
Good to see you. How are you? Nice to see you. What's up? Pleasure to see you. Mr. President, how is everything?
How's it going there, Dicko?
Well, Mr. President, I just would hope that you and all the other American people would understand that this is the first time that I've ever shot a man accidentally. Surely you understand that, Mr. President. I'd also like to say, I don't know why I'm getting all this grief. I went to visit the man I shot in the hospital.
You shot a man in the hospital, too?
Get on.
Okay. We're going to be joined by former administration aide, Scooter Libby, or as we call him, Scooby Libby. Of course, many people are questioning the people that I keep losing in my administration. You know, people left and right, I keep losing people involved with me. And I just want to assure all Americans that if I lose anyone else, don't worry. I stand ready to step up, take over.
And don't worry about things, Scooter. We're going to get you reinstated. We'll even get you back pay.
Thanks, Mr. Cheney.
We'll even pay you radioactively. When people asked about who leaked that agent, I pleaded ignorance, that's been my theme.
We all don't want to swim with shoes of cement, so Scooter's gonna take one for the team.
You want me steering the news away from you guys?
My polls are going lower than my grades at Yale.
Just walk the plank, we both will say thanks.
I'm so indicted.
He's gonna fight it.
I'm less popular than him and I'm unindicted. So it's decided.
I was misguided.
They know, they know, they know, they know, they know. They got you, they got you.
I'll get a lawyer and I won't take chances. They're gonna offer me some kind of deal.
Just plead exterminating circumstances.
Or maybe like Ned Beatty, I will squeal.
Right now I'm freaking leaking right into my trousers.
If I tattle, that'll lead to both of you.
Don't go that trail, I'm too cute for jail.
Don't be short-sighted.
Then help me fight it.
Well, If we have a good excuse, hey, I think they'll buy it.
Hey, let's all try it.
I am not a crook.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Judith Miller.
Mission accomplished.
Oh, done!
And that was from the Capitol Steps album, I'm So Indicted, the title song, actually. You know how it is. You want to please the Republicans and the Democrats, too, and not offend nobody or not offend too many people. But you can offend me, and you can speak your mind if you want to talk on Free Radio Santa Cruz, talk about issues like the closing of the E3 that is the subject of, was the subject of a hearing last week. Actually, it was earlier this week. It was last week, actually. It was last Thursday at 7 o'clock, and I actually picked up the tape to that hearing this afternoon, and I'm going to be playing it. It's a long tape, so I don't think I'm going to play the whole thing. Actually, I'm going to try to find a time to play the whole thing so people, if they want to, can go through the grueling process of hearing how the Zoning Commission, the Planning Commission, turned down the E3 appeal, and how we will be losing the E3 venue, apparently, unless something rather strange happens, rather unexpected. And I've actually invited the owner of the E3 on, but he's repeatedly ducked the mic. He's a busy guy, but I've asked him several times. I tried to interview him, but can't seem to get him to stand still or talk at the time. So there will be some tape on him once I'm going to actually announce when I'm going to play this tape, and it's probably going to be like 2 or 3 in the morning on Free Radio, because that's the only time that there are large amounts of unclaimed airtime open on this radio station. We have a kind of a fairly substantial collective that has a number of people, each of whom has a show, and each of whom values her his time on the air, and it's not something you can easily preempt, although I do my best. And what I'm going to do is I will announce on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, the local Santa Cruz indie media website, where what time this is going to be played. And if you miss it, it'll be archived. It'll be archived on the, believe, on the Huff website. We'll put it there so you can go back and listen to it yourselves if you want to hear it. You can also go get a tape for $2. They'll make you a tape at the planning department, but it'll take you about 3 or 4 days, and who wants to bother with that, right? But before we get into that, let's turn to the main topic of my show, which has to do with a grinding under of poor and homeless people. It happens around the world, but as it happens here in Santa Cruz, and that's my concern, because here we might have something to say about it so we can actually exercise some influence in that matter. Although we can't seem to get a stupid law like the sleeping ban law changed, the law that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night outside, that it has no place for homeless people to sleep in Santa Cruz. The shelter's taking care of a mega 40 people out of a population of 1,500 to 2,000. And we're going to be doing a protest around that and a signing up of people for a lawsuit against police enforcement of this unconstitutional law on Sunday, as we did last Sunday in front of the BS Santa Cruz, the Bookshop Santa Cruz, whose owner is Ryan Coonerty's dad, Neil Coonerty, former mayor of Santa Cruz and also current supervisor. Coonerty is, according to this recent report, which I'll play for you later in this show, I got a phone call back from him in response to a Monday phone call. That's not too bad. Ryan has been pretty good about returning my calls, unlike Lynn Robinson and Tony Madrigal, the first of whom has never returned a phone call, and the second hasn't returned a phone call in 2 years. I have to say that Ryan Coonerty, though it may not be worth listening to on the phone call in a certain sense, because his answers are not what I want to hear. Well, he's worth listening to, but his answers are not what I want to hear, and his position, frankly, isn't worth anything. It's in the negatives on the sleeping ban issue, because he simply... It's a strange position. He's a constitutional expert, and he's an attorney. He teaches classes in the Constitution, yet he doesn't want to apply it to his own city, where he has some power as vice mayor. But, of course, that's really kind of standard for politicians. They're only concerned about constitutional rights if there's some constituency behind them. And I suppose that's standard for politicians, but they also claim to be conscientious supporters of the Constitution and teachers about it, then they're running a kind of a phony number on us. And I'm afraid that's what's happening with Ryan. Maybe he's fooling himself, too, and not really believing he's fooling us. Maybe he's quite sincere in what he does. I think he probably is. I don't think he thinks, now I'll go out and cheat people today on this issue. But I don't think Bush thinks that either. I think Bush thinks he's doing everything for the good of the country, you know. I think that a lot of people have thought that throughout history. They blind themselves to what really is happening. And, of course, our job as people suffering under this shit or watching other people who are less fortunate than we suffering is to stand up and say, hold it. No, you shouldn't arrest someone for sleeping when there's no legal place to sleep. No, you shouldn't arrest someone for covering up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night. No, you can't run around the Poganip slashing people's tents and destroying their personal property just because you put up a little notice that says you're going to do that. That's not constitutional, it's not just, it's not fair, and it's not something that we will allow you to get away with without severe embarrassment, possibly a lawsuit, possibly people singing outside your house and people pointing outside, people picketing outside your office. We'll do what's necessary to restore basic civil rights to this community. And that's, of course, what I've been urging for decades and will continue to urge. In fact, on Sunday, I may bring in this book that talks about and the importance of different means to that end, and not simply some sort of nonviolent dogma on this issue. I'm not saying that I'm a big violence fan, but the idea that people who propose more direct action, which may involve, for example, the destruction of property, which I'm not necessarily advising, mind you, should be dismissed out of hand as provocateurs is a position that is not shared by a lot of people in the radical community, certainly not shared by people in resistance movements the world over, but it's not shared by even individuals who are not particularly into taking up arms, and certainly not arms against people. But anyway, I'm probably be talking about that on Sunday, perhaps before Mike Rotkin and Julian Greenside begin their number at 10. Also coming up on Friday, tomorrow, Craig Canada, the medical marijuana website guy, palmspringsbum.org, I believe, is his website, although I can never be sure if it isn't .com. He's going to be going to trial. His trial continues in Department 1 at 701 Ocean Street for sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. I know most of you would think that there's nothing wrong with that, but it's against the law in Santa Cruz if you're poor and outside. So, he's going back into court. Last time I was there, he faced, I think, five or six police officers. There was no prosecutor, and the judge allowed the charade to continue. She allowed each officer to testify. She allowed officers to make arguments, even though the city attorney didn't bother to show up, and the district attorney declared he wasn't going to deal with the issue. I think the district attorney kind of sat back or something. So we have a situation where they're trying to run poor people through a gauntlet without even the semblance of basic constitutional rights. Meanwhile, at the same time, as those of you who are regular listeners to the show know, the courts are denying ordinary people like myself access to the records of what's happened to people who've been taken to court, taken to jail, ticketed, fined, cited for this crime of sleeping after 11 o'clock on public property. And we're not talking about sleeping on someone's lawn or sleeping in front of somebody's shop door or blocking the sidewalk with your body or pissing all over somebody's car and then, you know, going to sleep in front of it. We're talking about people who have gone out of their way to make themselves invisible, who have tried to get sleep, you know, in areas where they won't be found by police, but police go out on sweeps and find them. And actually, I'm about to play an interview with a man who was part of the census procedure this year that went out and counted homeless people, found less homeless people than last year, but a greater percentage of them said that they couldn't find shelter. It's interesting. We're going to be listening to that and how that procedure goes down and what he found as a homeless person and told to do or paid to do the census. But again, the schedule for the next few days for those who are interested in such things, tomorrow at 2:30 in Department 1 at the courthouse is Craig Canada's case. And I'm going to be there probably, and I hope you will too if you'd like. He's likely to be found guilty or possibly that his case may be dismissed. It's kind of a complicated situation because the judge has said that she understands, her judge's name is Deneen Guy, that there is a policy of dismissing citations if they get a letter from the Homeless Services Center that says the shelters were full, which sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Except that the shelters are always full, and you shouldn't have to go and get a letter. They're always full, certainly between April 15th and November 15th, when there are 40 spaces for 1,500 to 2,000 people, homeless people outside. And even during the winter with the armory open, that adds another 75 to 100 spaces. That's obviously another drop in the bucket. So the complication here is that Craig Canada has been thrown out of the Homeless Services Center, he says, because he's gay, and he protested anti-gay comments made by other homeless people. He uses medical marijuana. He has a card. He's a legitimate user under Proposition 215. He actually lost his housing because of abusive behavior by a landlord up in Boulder Creek. He was talking to me about it today around marijuana. He hasn't been able to find new housing because people receiving federal funds are threatened with a cutoff of funds, or the Homeless Service Center is too nervous to allow him to medicate himself, even though California law not only permits but protects such medication. So it's going to be an interesting case tomorrow when he goes before the court, because he doesn't have the letter that says you can't, we were full those nights. But he wasn't allowed in because of his medical marijuana use. And so he's going to be, we'll see what the judge does. He'll probably be found guilty, and he'll probably become a plaintiff in the lawsuit, which is being put together. It's going to cost us $10,000, not to the attorneys, but to pay for the court fees, costs, depositions, expert witnesses. I think we got $4,000 already committed. We need $6,000 more. Open up your pockets and start shaking them out, folks. If you're interested, give a call to 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, if you'd like to donate. If you want to talk about the issue, you can call in 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC, 427-FREE-RADIO-SANTA-CRUZ, which is what I'm talking to you on here or from right now. Anyway, Craig Canada, 2:30 tomorrow, Department 1. Then on Saturday, the Human Rights Organization, if you're interested, is working on this sleeping ban lawsuit. They'll be meeting at the Wired Wash Cafe, which is right next to the Saturn, and it's up there at Laurel and Pacific. That's at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Then at 2 o'clock on Sunday, well, then you can check out the protest and tabling, where we're going to be asking people to come up and support us. And also, if you're homeless or poor, or you know somebody who's homeless or poor and gotten a sleeping ban ticket, come on by and tell us your story. Tell us when it happened. If you're still sleeping outside, you're in danger of getting more such tickets, more such harassment. You're in danger of being assaulted or raped if you're not able to sleep in a safe place. And you can't sleep in a safe place if you can't sleep in a group. And you can't sleep in a group if the police are coming after you unconstitutionally, claiming you have no right to sleep because you're poor in Santa Cruz. And that's what we are going to go after, based upon the success of a similar lawsuit in Los Angeles in the so-called Jones decision of April 2006. And at that particular time, they found it was a violation, they being the Federal Court of Appeals, that it was the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals found it was a violation of the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It was cruel and unusual punishment. Maybe cruel or unusual punishment, one of the two, maybe both. And that to arrest someone when you know there's not enough shelter space, just watch them go through a revolving door just to punish them, just to drive them away, just to make their life more difficult when they have no options. Which, of course, is the modus operandi here in Santa Cruz, the way they do it. And the way they do it in most other cities, frankly. It's not that we're unique, it's that we live here. It's our responsibility to stop this shit because we live here. It's our job to say no. You know, you may be lynching blacks in some other city. You may be kicking Puerto Ricans around up in San Francisco. You know, you may be harassing Jordanians and Saudi Arabians and Iraqis over here, but you're not going to do it here. Not in our backyard. No. We'll turn around the NIMBYs and we make it, we're going to have civil rights in this town. That's what we're going to have. We're going to correct the civil wrongs. We're going to throw out the politicians who want to pander like Rotkin and Matthews and all the rest of these clowns who don't want to take a real position on this issue as far as basic human rights for poor people, and put in people who will. Of course, that's much easier said than it's like trying to, you know, replace people in Congress or the, you know, the presidency. It's just, it's an illusion. It's a dream. But what isn't a dream is finding ways to come together to change this. There are many ways to skin a cat, so to speak. It's an unfortunate metaphor. And there are many ways to restore civil rights in Santa Cruz, and we got to find them. Let's not stop until we do, and we get together to talk about it, and we do so on the radio, we do so in gatherings, we do so every week at the Huff meeting, which was pretty successful, actually, our Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting yesterday, which we hold every Wednesday, 9:30. I guess we're going to be on the right outside the coffee cart in this, warm weather, right outside the coffee cart, right outside the metal detector in the courthouse in the atrium breezeway area. Usually we're downstairs, we have been, but we're going to move up. So all these things are coming up, and I think there even may be a shitty council meeting coming up. And I'll try to look in on that one on Sunday and give you some thoughts about what's cooking with that. And as I said, the E3 Playhouse stuff, I'm going to play a little bit of it today after I play this one segment that I'm about to play on the issues of a homeless man's view of how the census works based upon his paid work as a census taker. The E3 stuff, I'm going to try to find a time and a place to play. And you may not be able to hear it directly, but if you have a computer, you'll be able to replay it in case you're interested. And I'll play a little of it today as well. Again, if you have any comments or thoughts, please call in 427-3772, 427-3772. That may sound like dead air. In fact, it actually is dead air, but we're not going to be satisfied with dead air. We are going to have some live air, so hang tough.
Okay, well, it's June 26, 2007, or maybe it's the 27th, and we're moving into June. It's Tuesday, the 26th, actually. And I'm talking with...
Tony Ferguson.
And Tony, you're a man who's got housing and work now, but for a long time you were unemployed and homeless. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
And of course, you made your living by shooting up, attacking bicyclists, and raping poor innocent women, right?
No,
certainly not. I'm just trying to get the proper view of the homeless population here, as seen by the Sentinel and some individuals in the housed community. But actually, you were recently involved in you lived at Camp Paradise for a while, and you were part of the Santa Cruz Service Corps for a while, and then the alternate organization that developed out of that until it was, of course, torpedoed by that great humanitarian Paul Lee and Larry Templeton.
Paul Lee, that's right.
Those were the days. You can read all about this nowhere, actually. Actually, you can read all about this probably in Huff literature, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
And just very briefly, Camp Paradise was the last Santa Cruz-based homeless-run encampment. It was on the banks of the San Lorenzo River, an area that has now been closed off by Danette Shoemaker for reforesting, or actually they're not really doing anything, they're just sweeping the area and getting rid of homeless people, again trying to deny people basic survival rights, basic survival options. And Larry Templeton led this campsite for about 9 months, had a lot of community support. It was washed away by the flood, and it was also washed away in a bunch of hypocritical rhetoric from the Santa Cruz City Council when Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice was mayor, and council members Kennedy and Primack were feigning an interest in Camp Paradise and to embarrass the progressive majority, which involved Sugar and Crone and Byers and people like that. Actually, Byers had left the council by that time. Porter, Riley, the pseudo-progressives that we unfortunately still have with us. Again, listening more to Tony, a former Camp Paradise resident now, housed and working.
You want to go online, Camp Paradise, Paul Lee. You might find some of my deconstruction of the official myths around this whole thing.
Good Times had articles.
And the Good Times, I don't think they actually covered the poverty pimpery and the kind of manipulation that Lee and Templeton engaged in toward the end when the majority of the people involved wanted to set up their own organization or at least to control the organization. And they were essentially told, you know, no, 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 get the fuck out. And Templeton moved off to Aptos with a select band of his followers.
And this is a kind of an elliptical update for those who actually knew something about Camp Paradise, which, again, was like six years ago in Santa Cruz. For most of you, it's probably a rather obscure reference. At some point, perhaps we'll talk about Camp Paradise and what's happened to it. It was an important experiment and actually led the next year to a meeting, a summit of all kinds of homeless encampments up and down the coast, and garnered a lot of community support. People became very much concerned, as they are, with basic, not just civil rights, but social services for poor and homeless people. And there was also a lot of misinformation given out about it. Some people at the center wanted to control and co-opt it, including the person who ran it, Larry Templeton, a main supporter later on of the Santa Cruz Service Corps, Paul Lee. And there were the majority was essentially kicked down the road on this issue. If you ain't got the money, honey, you're on your own. If you ain't got the power and the contacts, you got to go somewhere else.
And the Santa Cruz Service Corps dissolved into the mist. You may remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember it.
But you were you recently went to involve yourself in a new applied research group. I think it's called some such thing, Survey of the Homeless.
Yeah, it's census survey, and for the federal government for funding. Basically.
Another money grab by the poverty pimps here, mm-hmm. which might have the additional benefit of giving the community a sense of, you know, at least what's cooking to some extent in the homeless community. Describe where'd you hear about that, and what were the first things you did involving yourself with that project?
It was listed at the homeless shelter. They put a list up asking if anybody wants to make money, they can come and do a class to learn how to do the census for homeless, so we can get benefits for everything, you know.
So like, you were being coaxed into a class so they could provide you with a little better gruel and possibly the vision of a shelter, place to sleep at night. Well, let's not say that. Let's say the vision of a place for 60 people to sleep at night out of a population of 1,500 to 2,000, which wouldn't expand anything, but which would build a spiffy new kind of annex or second floor to the homeless service center as it now exists, replacing the ISSP program. Actually, I'm sure they didn't put it quite that way.
Yeah, they put a lot of different things involved, you know, listing of what the government can give counties or cities for money, you know, which is they have no idea unless they know how many homeless there really is. So they take the homeless and send them out there to get an accurate count, which, you know, they're giving us money to find out where our friends are. We don't have to tell them exactly the locations of them, but we walk by and, okay, put a check mark, there's a camp there, camp there, camp there, you know, a camp there. So as we're walking, you know, you get a list of camps, you got 50, 75 people doing that and around the whole county, you know, it adds numbers up, you know. And
you went to a class to begin this whole process?
Yeah.
Where was the class?
It was at the homeless shelter.
And how many people were in the class?
50 probably, 50, 60 people.
And so and you say that when you went out later that the 50 or 60 were joined by a person from the city?
Not direct, like a volunteer from the city.
Right.
Or
a staff member?
A staff member of the census group, you know, or the staff member of the homeless shelter. So we drove around in cars, or we walked, and we went to the areas that we were most familiar with, And so if we got every baby homeless person that's familiar with every area in the county, supposedly you'll get an accurate account of homeless.
How many areas did you cover? How many areas was this all subdivided into? 50 areas?
There's tons of areas from UCSC Pocono up all the way to Nicene Marks and everything in between there.
And what was your area?
My area was Aptos area, mm-hmm. from Soquel Drive to basically Seacliff Inn, Seascape exit, mm-hmm. and up that area.
And what? Actually, describe how long it took and what you did, and who you were with.
Took us about 3 hours, and we drove every street we could possibly find. You know, looking.
What time of day?
We were up at 5 a.m. And they wanted us to do it at 5 a.m. so we wouldn't bug people, mm-hmm. and let them know that we were doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, because. You know, they had it all planned out. You know, if a homeless person sees a non-familiar face there, you know, you might get shot, you might get whatever. You know, they figured that. They figured the worst. So we were supposed to scan our cars and just assume if we saw a car with shades up, it's homeless. You know, count it, no matter what. Mm-hmm. If you see a car that's been there, that just moves back and forth, count it. You know, if you see encampments or whatever, count them. You know,
so you didn't actually go into people's tents? Did you run across any tents, or...?
In my area, I didn't, but, you know, I wasn't too familiar with that area. You know,
they were sending you an area you were familiar with.
They were supposed to, but a lot of people didn't. They just did areas which they got because they wanted to make the money. You know, because, Frank and, another person lived up in the Poganip for years, and they did their areas. They're about the only two people that really did the areas that they were really familiar with. A lot of people just grabbed areas to do them, you know, just so they can make the money, but they still got, you know.
And how much money did you make to do this?
Depending on the hours, it was $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. So 3 hours, I made $30 plus $25 just to do the class, mm-hmm. you know. I've lived in Santa Cruz all my life, so I'm pretty familiar with most of the areas.
So how long have you been homeless in Santa Cruz?
I was homeless for almost 6 years.
This is because, of course, your vicious drug problem and your tendency to, you forgot all your skills and had to be retrained at a cost to the city, right?
Oh, yeah. Retraining costs a lot. But, yeah, basically true.
In other words, I was trying to be sarcastic, but if it really was true, let's hear that. What made you homeless?
Bad decisions and money management and life decisions and, you know.
But yeah, anything to do with losing a job or losing housing, it wasn't factors beyond your control. You hold yourself accountable for becoming homeless?
I always hold myself accountable for anything.
But in
Santa Cruz County, yeah, it's just, you know, loss of a job, you know, resources and whatnot.
Did you lose a job? What immediately precipitated your being homeless?
For real?
Yeah.
My wife got an embezzlement charge on her house that was given to her by an aunt, and it got repossessed, and so...
Was this because she was embezzling money, or is it because there was some problem with it? Now, was she a guilty party here, a criminal scam unveiled, or was it in fact something else that was more of a misfortune, or something between the two?
Well, her aunt gave her a house,
or something entirely different.
She gave her a house. She got a loan on the house to make the house better, but she didn't do that. She spent the money on the other things, and ended up not paying the loan back. So. The federal government didn't really like that, so I came in and picked her up and charged her with embezzlement and took the house away from her.
And you became homeless because you were essentially dependent on her economically, or?
We just got together at that time, and, you know, it just all crashed down like that.
Or were you emotionally attached to her? What kind of drugs were you doing?
Illicit ones. No, drugs you're not supposed to do.
Such as?
I won't comment.
Okay. So you're not going to talk about the arsenic that you took and the strychnine and things of that sort?
No. This is the euphoria stuff, you know.
So you yourself have given up your junkie ways?
Yes. Yeah.
And now you become a workaholic?
I've always been a workaholic. That's always my thing. It's just
what kind of work do you do?
Construction, you know. Anything, actually, mechanic, construction.
And you actually work. You work how many hours a day now?
6 to 8.
And you're living where you work.
Yes.
And you pay rent.
Yes, I do.
What kind of rent do you pay?
The rent that takes money.
I mean, but is it, how much money do you pay a month?
Actually, I got a really good deal because the person I'm living with is really, actually very fair. I pay $300 a month.
Wow, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah, very room, but got its shower, lawn, laundry, utilities and stuff. And, you know, this is basically on a trust thing and, you know, have respect and it all works.
You also do work for this guy?
Yes, I do.
And does he pay you by the hour?
Yeah, he does.
Well, what's your hourly rate?
$15 an hour.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a living wage.
Yeah. It's good. Huh. You know, he's very...
Hey, introduce me to this guy. I could get together.
Yeah.
Oh, leave that on the side. So let me again, with the census, so you said that in the past, the census has been marked with bad consequences for the homeless.
Just once did I hear that. I've never heard about the census before this, you know, but then after I did the class, I talked to a couple of friends, and they said they did the census, and they would never do it again because it was a big scam, you know. And
how so?
Well, it's like they really did the census, and they did it, you know, all properly. Like they walked people through it, and then the very next day, the county, the sheriffs just came and raided everyone's camp and all the spots and arrested a lot of people.
Did that happen this time?
Happened this time too.
It did.
Yeah, within a day or two, and they had two ranger people too with dogs. So it made it a lot easier for them to get through the probing up and
now,
find areas.
How do you know that this happened? What kind of reports did you receive?
Well, everybody was pretty safe right after the census. About 13 people that got arrested or kicked out or cited or whatnot.
And that number comes from?
What's that?
Where'd you get that number from?
From my homeless friends. You know, I'm almost like you hear everything when you're down there.
Now, this is the... People said, I was kicked out, or my friend was kicked out, or I heard somebody say somewhere that somebody was kicked out.
You see the cops and the rangers walking through all the encampments. Anyway, they don't do that all the time.
You saw that?
I didn't see it personally, no.
But you heard reports of it.
Yeah, they were set up everywhere. You know, they went and swept all of the pogoing up and everything.
And what was the, when was the census? What was the date you did this, more or less? April, May, March?
It was, March, well, right before March, about February. Okay. I don't remember, I think it was in February, yeah.
Okay, guys, it may have been March, because I think that's what the,
March, could have been right there, March, end of February, March.
Yeah, so, this was, the armory was still open.
Yeah, the armory was still open.
So, you still retain contact with a number of homeless people, not having forsaken your vagabond associations?
You always contact your friends, you know. If you can't go around Santa Cruz and not see them, homeless people everywhere. If I go down to town, I see my homeless friends. I don't turn my back and deny them.
Don't you want to move up to a new level?
But you got to humble yourself. You can't just move up and turn your back on things.
Well, you don't want to hang out with the scum of the earth, do you, Tony?
The scum of the earth, I guess, if that's what you want to call it.
A negative image. How are you ever going to, you know, get yourself a house and, you know, a Porsche this way?
You got to learn about who you are before you can change it.
Boy. So have you heard that what's happening these days in the last week or two? Has there been much of a crackdown recently? Because new rangers are supposedly being trained and new police officers, including the homeless resource officer, Eric Seeley, is reportedly on the job helping Ranger Wallace to control the crime problem in the Pocono.
He's always been doing that. You know, they just got smarter and got the dogs and, you know, they've got better areas, you know, because, you know, they figure, you know, Ranger Wallace has got a bad leg, so he don't walk the mountains too much like that, and he's the head of the guy, so, you know, they get inside information on where they can go, which, you know, homeless people, they can dig themselves in anywhere. You could be walking by a tree, and there can be a burrow, and there'll be, you know, two or three people in there, and you don't even know, you know, and so you get...
Those homeless are a wily lot, aren't they? They have to be kind of rooted out, right?
Yeah. They're resourceful.
So have you heard has there been more busts recently or not?
I haven't really been paying too much attention to it. My focus has been on work a lot. You know, I don't go down to town too much, so I haven't heard a lot about it.
And finally, when you guys came back, and you, men and women were both involved in this survey, right?
Yeah.
When you came back to report in, and you also did some interviews subsequently of homeless people, you were paid $5 a piece?
Yeah, that came like a week and a half, 2 weeks later. They separated it, and then they gave us a chance to do the census, and then they offered us another opportunity to, you know, quote, make more money. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, you can do that, you do the census, you make $10 an hour. You know, that was the whole initiative, you know, the whole grabber, do the class, like, you know, $25 an hour, if you do the class, $10 an hour after, you know, and then they offered another little incentive of $5 a sheet to do interviews. And the interviews were not invasive to the person. All you did was just put their initials and their birthday, and then you just ask them a series of questions, you know.
What were the questions?
How long have you been homeless? What made you homeless? You know, do you get good health care, you know, when you need it? And
many people say they got good health care.
A lot of people actually say, HPHP was pretty good. You know, they helped them out a lot, you know.
What about shelter situations? And
shelter situations, yeah.
Questions about police harassment?
They asked some questions of how you've been arrested, how long, when was the last time, how long you've been out of jail, yeah.
Did they ask him if they'd been arrested for being homeless or been camping or sleeping?
Yeah, I think there was a question about that. How many times? I can't really be sure. I kind of really forget, but there was a lot of questions. A lot of them were invasive. You didn't have to answer if you didn't want to. Mm-hmm. You know, so they gave you an option that the person doesn't have to answer if they didn't really want to.
So you would ask questions, they would answer, and you would check the box, or
there would be a list of things that could possibly happen, and then the bottom would say other. And if they wanted to explain other, they'd explain it. Mm-hmm. Just like
Would they write it up, or would you write it up?
We would write the questionnaire in. Yeah. We'd just ask them questions, and we'd name off what was listed underneath for answers.
And you did five of these?
I did five, yeah. Five.
And they were paid. You were paid how much?
$5 a piece. Plus, you gave the person in your interview a $5 phone card for doing, you know, because of the interview. Mm-hmm. So
for taking the time to do it. How long did it take to do each interview?
Took about 20 minutes.
Okay. And you also, was there information gathered on where homeless camps were when people got back to the reported back in their results? Did they ask you where are the main homeless camps and such?
No, they knew. They know where everybody is. Basically, they just don't know exact specific locations. I mean, if you know an area, you get.
Did they ask for those specific locations?
And they did ask for specific locations. When we did the walk and the checkout, they just made us put check marks if it was like a camp, a car, walk-in person or whatnot, and then check how many people we thought would be in that encampment. You know, and it was like...
Not the location.
No, you got the location already. They already have the location.
We're going to interrupt this exciting tape, which I apologize for the distortions, because we have a caller on the line, a certain Mr. TV. Hello there, Mr. TV.
How you doing, Robert?
I'm good. You make sure your radio or your computer is turned down, because otherwise you'll get a delay. So just listen to me on the phone. So there.
Right. I don't live in Santa Cruz, so I can't pick up your show.
No, but you could pick it up on the
which I would definitely be listening to, undoubtedly, if I did live in Santa Cruz.
Indeed, and perhaps you might even be rebroadcasting it on TV, because you are Mr. TV.
Robert, I'm a TV, and you turn me on.
Oh, well, I try to every time I see you on the mall. You are, in fact, a man with, you have a display device, which is, in fact, the frame of a TV and numerous items, which kind of give give action presentations on the mall, in not just in Santa Cruz, but also in San Francisco and other cities.
Yeah, I've broadcast all over California and in other states. I perform in street fairs and festivals. I am a human television. I don't have cable. But I have rope and handcuffs back in my apartment. I don't know if any women are listening to the broadcast, but no, I'm just kidding. But I'm involved in a recent controversy. I've been charged with a $628 ticket for panhandling and a commercial display, running a commercial table. Now, anybody that's seen my show knows that it is not a commercial table, that I do a puppet show, which is First Amendment free speech. Of course, I was you know, very flattered that someone was asking me for my autograph, but then I realized what I was signing was the bottom of a ticket, agreeing to appear in court.
And this actually happened on more than one occasion, right?
Well, I've been Mr. TV since 1998. I started on Venice Beach in Los Angeles. And, yeah, I've been, I think I've been ticketed, maybe this is the 14th time.
Wow.
And I've been arrested 3 times, both in Los Angeles and San Francisco. I was handcuffed and taken to a jail cell. And
what were you accused of?
Well, different things in different cities. What they're basically doing is they're infringing on my First Amendment rights. They give different rationalizations for that. I mean, with this act, I think I'm really going places. Of course, hopefully it won't be to a penitentiary.
No.
But, no, in Los Angeles, I was charged with using an amplifier.
Uh-huh.
And in San Francisco, I was charged with blocking the sidewalk. Now, here I've been charged with panhandling and having a commercial stand.
And this is an unusual panhandling charge because it's not just like having a sign or asking for spare change. You were accused of following, something like that?
Yeah, there's something that says following, which I've never done. I don't follow people.
Hmm.
But, you know, it's a good, clean show. I don't see why there's any reason for censorship. I mean, it's nothing you couldn't see on television.
Indeed. And, in fact, this is a much more direct kind of situation where people can see the actual man behind the screen.
Right. This is a people's television. You know, I think too often in this society, people just sit in an apartment and stare at this little box, and this little box programs them and tells them what products to buy, and there's no interaction with other human beings. Whereas mine is, I think of it as a people's television. I mean, too much television nowadays is lies and brainwashing. I think of mine as lies for people. It's like brainwashing for people.
How long have you been?
And that's what makes all the difference.
Right on. I mean, how long?
In other words, it's like the world's first organic television. That's why it's so degrading.
Now, how long have you been coming to Santa Cruz?
I guess about a year and a half.
Have you noticed any change in how the police have treated you, or the so-called hosts, the people who are kind of the eyes and ears?
The hostility patrol.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing too, is that I've been coming to Santa Cruz for like 18 months, and the other day a cop comes up to me, I guess it was last week, and he's like, you have to rotate every hour. Well, if I have to rotate every hour, how come no one's said anything to me about it for 18 months? Is that selective enforcement? So I told him that I wouldn't move. And so anyway, I have another ticket for refusing to move.
The famous one-hour move-along law, which you said was being enforced on some of the other, which other people were ignoring, whether they were homeless panhandlers or the balloon man, or you said that those folks.
Yeah, yeah. This was going on in April. There was a woman in the hostility patrol, Lisa, and she was making me move once an hour, but not anyone else. And one day I was trying to comply. I tried to cooperate, and I broke down. And
how long did it take you to break down your stance?
Well, it takes like 15 minutes.
Because it's kind of a complicated stand you have, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a little tent that's sort of made of PVC pipe. But for a while I was complying. I'd break down. And then I started noticing the balloon man didn't have to move every hour. The Dharma blanket didn't have to move every hour. The guitar players, the panhandlers, it was just me. She just didn't like me. And so one day I said, this is discrimination. I'm not going to move because everyone else isn't moving. And that was when she called the police, and he said, you have to move. And I said, I can't move because of discrimination. And that was when I got the ticket for running a commercial stand and panhandling by following. And the cop himself even told me, he said, well, I don't like this, but this is what I have to do.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I don't, it isn't really what he has to do. He could always tell the complaining people that they can always take their complaints to the city attorney. He isn't required to. If they come to you and they try to make an actual citizen's arrest and hold you and say, and then turn you over to the cop, I suppose, is required to either take you to a magistrate or write you out a ticket. But most merchants, in spite of their little seminars that they have, they give people seminars, the merchant employee seminars, on how to give out a ticket to a guitar player or a street performer or a homeless person just to get rid of them or to frighten them away or to drag them into court. But they haven't given them, as of yet, I've heard of no actual citizen's arrest because the police go in and do the dirty work. But the police don't have to. It's optional until such time as they actually take you into custody. That is my understanding of the citizen's arrest.
Yeah, you don't have to obey an order that you know is false. I mean, they established that in Nuremberg, the trials of the Nazi war criminals.
Well,
these people use the same defense. I was following orders when I killed, you know, millions of people.
Well, all I know is it used to be that a citizen could, if you told a cop, see that person is violating the law, and I want that person given a ticket or a citation, the police officer had to give you a ticket, or else face some kind of penalty. That was changed in 2003, became discretionary. So now what the police do is they'll give you a citation, Mr. TV. From a merchant who doesn't like you or a host who doesn't, you know, wants you to move along, but they won't. If you try to turn around and say, hey, this host Lisa person is making a false report, I'd like to have you issue a citation against her for making a false report, the police officer doesn't have to do it and doesn't do it. So it's an interesting...
No, because I said, at the time, I said, well, what's her name? I said, I'd like to make a complaint on her. And he said, well, her name is Lisa. I don't know her last name. And he said, you'll have to ask her. And so I asked her. She said, I don't want to talk to you. So I said, this is a double standard.
No, certainly.
It's like, how come when she calls the police, he comes over, he has to see my ID, he calls in for warrants. Like, I'm a criminal because I'm an artist. I'm not a criminal, I'm an artist. Is that a synonym? Criminal artist.
Maybe you're a criminal artist.
Oh, there's an artist. Let's call in for warrants.
Right, like, arrest that guy. So you,
yeah, and so they never would tell me her name. And I've also, well, only one time I called in a complaint on another performer, and I feel kind of bad about it now, but he was just really drunk and really loud and off-key and right within, like, 3 feet of my stand, which is real hard to move. And I did call the police that one time.
Did they ticket him?
They did not answer my call.
Of course. They,
if you're a performer, the police don't answer your calls.
Interesting. Or at least in this case, they didn't. Now, your case goes to trial or goes to arraignment when?
The 11th, July 11th at 8:30. If anybody wants to attend my arraignment, they can. And I plan to wear a television on my head.
Oh, really?
It's my, I believe that it's my First Amendment right to free self-expression. And I have started, in fact, wearing a television on my head at all times.
Really?
And, yeah, this is true. I've been doing that, I guess, for, 3 years.
Is this some sort of primitive ritual now, the television on the head?
Well, it's part of my belief system. It's the First Amendment gives me absolute right to free expression of my religion, and this is part of my religion.
Of course, you know, they have a practice in court. They make you take off your hat. They may make you take off your head as well.
Yeah, I've never seen them order someone to take a television off of their head.
That could be interesting.
I don't know if that's but it's true. I wear a television on my head at all times. And my girlfriend sometimes complains, you know, that I wear a television on my head even when we're
making love?
Well, I won't be graphic.
Yeah. Well, then she can, you know, if she gets bored, she can always turn the channel, I suppose.
Well, don't give her any ideas. Yeah. But,
well, I could propose something else.
Now, adult pay-per-view costs extra.
Yes, of course.
Like I say, I have cable. I don't have cable, but I have rope and handcuffs in my bedroom.
I see. Well, so are you trolling for volunteers here, or what's going on?
Well, that's always within the realm of possibility.
Now, you've actually won cases in the past in court, right?
I've never lost. I have a perfect record. Every single ticket I've gotten has been dismissed. And in Los Angeles, I sued the city of Los Angeles. I had a lawyer. Thank God for that. But I won a $10,000 settlement.
Wow. Of which the attorney got the major part, I'll bet.
Yeah, we won a $28,000 settlement, and he got $18,000, and I got $10,000.
Huh.
And so I found out later he's only supposed to take a third. So he was only supposed to take nine. so he kind of reversed it on me. But I got $10,000. I mean, what can I say?
How long did it take you to get the settlement?
It was 18 months from the time I first called the attorney. Now, he went a year before he filed it. And so, but after he filed it, it only took 6 months.
Huh. And were you able to continue to perform as Mr. TV during that time while this was happening or not?
There was a period of time that the police wouldn't let me set up, that they would arrest me or threaten to arrest me. So I had to move from Venice Beach to 3rd Street Promenade. I was arrested once on Venice Beach during that time by being handcuffed.
Now
I found out later that being handcuffed is technically being arrested.
Oh, for sure.
But I was not taken to jail.
Right. Yeah, if you're under arrest, you're detained. I guess you can be detained for investigation, but I don't think they handcuff you during detentions. I've never heard of that. You know, do you still travel down to Venice Beach and Santa Monica's Third Street Promenade or not?
Sometimes. I was down there. It's kind of a bit of a trek. I live in Northern California now. I was down there last April.
Now, have you noticed any changes down there? We've heard from Peggy Lee Kennedy and others, Carol Sobel, an attorney doing lawsuits down there. She actually hasn't been on the show, but she's one of the attorneys behind the attempt to restore rights for performers on the in Venice Beach. Have you heard anything from Venice Beach?
Are you talking about the lottery?
Well, I'm talking about any changes in conditions for performers down there.
Well, I guess it was a year ago from January, I went there and they were starting this lottery. That was about 2 years ago. And some of the performers were fighting the lottery, and I was too at first. And then eventually I decided I liked the lottery.
Really?
All you have to do if you're a performer is show up, I think it's Tuesday at 8:30, and they put all the performers' names in a bucket, and then they draw your name out, and you're assigned a number that corresponds to a space. And then that's your space all week. And so even if you show up at noon, if someone's in your space, they have to move. It's like, that's my space. And so for me, it was very convenient. It cut down on a lot of these battles over space. And
but some people didn't like it.
Some people don't like it, yeah. And I think at one point I was down there was a lawsuit. I think Jingles, the vegetarian guy, he had an ACLU lawyer, and they had a press conference that I went to, and they were suing the city of Los Angeles. But I don't think they won.
Yeah, we actually got a report on this from Mr. Fidget, as he calls himself.
Mr. who?
Mr. Fidget. He's a guy who makes these little doodads that you play with. Well, they're a nervous, kind of snappy little thingamabobs you play with while you're trying to, think of something else. You nervously move your hands. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. Don't recall the outcome of that lawsuit. And in San Francisco, how were you treated up there as a street performer, as Mr. TV?
It's been pretty good the past few years. The police have sort of gotten used to me. I do my act on Hate Street. And
do you have to be careful where you go, or can you go to any place in town and do your act?
Well, the two main places, the main place is Fisherman's Wharf. I find that it costs like $20 to park your car in Fisherman's Wharf. And my thing is too big to fit on a bus. So Fisherman's Wharf doesn't work for me. So I started doing Hate Street. Now, Hate Street is mostly panhandlers. There's not a lot of performers. Or if it's a performer, it'll be someone like playing guitar, and they'll be there like one day, and then you won't see them again. There's Maria Mango. She's a folk singer who's really, really talented, who performs on Hate Street. And but sometimes it's just me and a bunch of panhandlers and a bunch of winos. But when I first was on Hate Street, I guess about 3 or 4 years ago, there was like a really mean cop who wouldn't let me set up, and he came out there one day and arrested me. He said, you have to move. I said no. And so he gave me a ticket, and then he said, okay, now you've gotten a ticket, now you have to move. And I said, I can't move because this is my right. The First Amendment gives me a right to free speech. You're infringing, because I had just finished the lawsuit in Los Angeles, so I knew the law. So anyway, he handcuffed me, and he called in a paddy wagon, and I was put in a paddy wagon. I was taken to a jail cell.
How did he treat your display device?
They confiscated it.
Did they hold it, or did they release it?
I got everything back. Yeah.
Immediately, or did you have to wait? Did you have to wait till trial?
No. I sat in. I wasn't even in a cell. I was in kind of the front part of the police office. But I was handcuffed, and then my handcuffs were chained to a bench. And so I was like completely immobile for like an hour. But see, I do meditation. I used to meditate for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So to meditate for an hour is no big thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard him talking in the back, and he was like, well, what did you get him on? He said, street entertainment. And the other cop said, well, that's kind of a stretch, isn't it? And I heard him talking in the back, and they finally realized, we don't have anything to charge this person with. There's no case. And so they finally, like, changed their mind and let me go. And then they gave me all my stuff back. And so then when I went to court, they just gave me a piece of paper that said dismissed. There was no trial. There was no... So I can't figure out, like, why did they go through all that in the first place?
Because the cop didn't like you and decided he was going to exert his authority. You know, it's interesting here that people who are street performers, I often worry because I advise people to stand, as you do, to stand up for their rights. But, you know, it's a problem when a person has their musical instrument is their livelihood. The worry that might be confiscated and therefore, you know, that they would be held in evidence pending trial. And my thought is one response to that is, you know, to make it clear, as you're making it clear, that, you know, you can hold my stuff in evidence, but every day that I don't have it will be a day that I suffer loss of my livelihood, for which you'll be sued in civil court following this. Of course, it's a nice threat to make, and you need an attorney to do it. But that may be a consideration for them that I hadn't really, that you can bring forward, and it may actually be a deterrent to the officers seizing your equipment. Because if they seize your equipment and it's an unconstitutional seizure, they are vulnerable for every day they've taken it, you know, every day you don't have it. Every day that you might have made money with it, and, you know, plus, of course, the value of the stuff itself is my thought. And this is something that I don't usually emphasize, or I haven't emphasized in the past when I talk to people about this, because I think, gosh, you know, they can take your equipment, you might lose the case, and then you wouldn't get anything. And that's true, but they have to worry that you might win the case. And that apparently is what they were afraid of in San Francisco when they didn't book your stuff into evidence, didn't charge you, just dismissed it. However, in Santa Cruz, you're going to be facing an arraignment, which really actually what it amounts to is they ask you to plead guilty or not guilty, or, you know, or ask for a continuance, which is often my advice to people in order to give you more time to get a lawyer and do publicity and so forth. But it's not really, there's no trial. It doesn't happen there. You get a trial a week or two later, and you don't get a trial in front of a jury normally for infractions. But you've had a very special response to that. When that demand comes up, you know, that you have to go before a judge and not get a jury, what have you done in the past when you've been confronted with that?
Well, I went before Basket, Kim Basket. What day was that, Tuesday? Or I'm not even sure. I can't even remember. It was this week, but
she's the referee in the basement.
She kicked me upstairs to
Deneen Guy.
A trial with a judge. I guess I'm not a Basket case.
I mean, I guess
but,
not.
She said that, you know, I requested a jury trial. She said, you don't have a right to a jury trial because this is an infraction. It's not a misdemeanor or felony. So I told her that according to the Bill of Rights, I do have a right to a jury trial.
And you then
quoted read her the Seventh Amendment. Suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved.
You're actually quoting the Seventh Amendment, correct?
I'm reading it. I'm holding a pocket constitution right now.
Right. Read it again.
So, and then she said...
Read it again. Read the Seventh Amendment again.
Okay. In suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. So, The idea that you only have a right to a jury trial for a misdemeanor or felony, which is a myth that has been perpetuated by our legal system. I've had lawyers tell me that. I've had lawyers say, oh, no, you don't have a right to a jury trial for an infraction.
Well, I tell people that, too. I mean, that's the policy and practice of the Santa Cruz courts.
Right. But if you go all the way back to the Constitution, guess what? It doesn't say that.
Yeah, but they have things in the Constitution like habeas corpus, the right to not to be held without a charge or a trial. These are old hat, Mr. TV. I mean, we're in a new era. Have you ever heard? Can you spell Guantanamo?
Right. Well, I'm a constitutionalist. I believe in the First Amendment. I believe in the Declaration of Independence. All men created equal. I believe in Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. So
they were okay for their time, but these are terrorist times. We don't want these things being confused and mucked up. There are threats everywhere, and you've got to go
right.
along.
Well, the war on terror is an interesting idea because terror is a noun. How do you fight a war against a noun? What you're creating is an endless war, and if a country like ferments wars, and then uses the war as an excuse to curtail civil liberties, it's a kind of a self-serving argument.
So,
and I also found this. This is in This is in Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. The trial of all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury. So that would completely wreck the entire legal system if that was followed, because they wouldn't be able to have a...
So have you ever actually gotten a judge to give you a jury trial for an infraction?
Never.
What happens instead?
The case is dismissed.
So
I've won, I think, 4 times on parking tickets, mostly in Los Angeles, and then once on a seatbelt violation in Redwood City by saying that I wanted a jury trial. And then they would find me guilty at the hearing. And of course, for parking tickets, you get this hearing. You don't even get a trial. Well, the Constitution says you have a right to a trial for any crime. But it also says you have a right to confront the witnesses against you. You don't get that on parking tickets. And when you start arguing with them, they say, according to the municipal code of whatever city you're in, if it's Los Angeles, the game works the same way in every city, blah, 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 municipal code number something, 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 or California vehicle code, and then you just go, well, that's unconstitutional. And then you'll be found guilty. And then you appeal it, and then when you go to Superior Court, and you have to get a judge and not a commissioner, and then...
Or referee, yeah.
I've done it 5 times. The judges have dismissed my charge.
And there are, I guess, 2 occasions where one the judge got apoplectic with you and refused to dismiss the charge.
Yeah, they made unconstitutional rulings. I said, well, can you tell me under what authority I'm not getting a jury trial? And he started shouting at me. He said, sir, that has been reinterpreted by the California Supreme Court. And I said that California Supreme Court doesn't have the right to reinterpret the Constitution. And then he got really mad. So, and he ended up ruling against me. But
we're talking with Mr. TV. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. Mr. TV is going to be in court on July 11th at 8:30 in the morning for his arraignment. I presume that will be followed by a trial, although they will probably, unless I'm really mistaken, they will by no means give you a jury trial for an infraction. But I suppose they might dismiss the charge, although
right,
I find...
Right, which is denial of due process.
Right, I don't think they're going to dismiss it either. I think they're going to send you into a judge trial or find you guilty. But, hey, I could be wrong, and I'd like to be wrong. And I know we've been talking about the Huff meeting and how to deal with this, because you're a street performer. You're a person who's trying to use the public space. You're no wealthy guy. And, you, along with other people, should have the right to be in public spaces, constitutionally protected. And frankly, just protected for the good of the community, whatever the Constitution says. But it does say.
And like the Declaration of Independence says, all men created equal.
Well, I just think
what we have out there is the double standard.
Well, I just think it's a positive thing to have a community that has a lot of diverse stuff going on, and not just a bunch of people selling shit downtown and taking over the entire community with their mercantile activity. I just don't think that's appropriate in Santa Cruz.
But to have free speech people, too, yeah.
Well, you got
to
have...
Robert, this is the most important battle in the history of the earth.
Well, it certainly...
I cannot surrender, because surrender is not found in my vocabulary.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you
know. Victory, then.
I mean, I think... I mean, if
victory
I,
or death.
All right. Well, I think if I were an Iraqi, I would consider other things more important. But as a you know, a Santa Cruzan who's wandering up and down Pacific Avenue, I certainly, you know, would like to see you get your rights restored, and I hope you do. And so we're going to see you stand up before the court and say, Your Honor, I have a right to a jury trial because it's guaranteed by the Seventh Amendment, right?
Exactly.
Well,
so thanks so much for having me on your show.
And when will you be coming back to Santa Cruz to be turned on by the community and vice versa?
I'll be there Friday.
That's tomorrow. Yeah,
tomorrow. And, you know, I've put out the Freedom Scrolls and allowed people who support what I'm doing to sign the Freedom Scrolls, and I've had an overwhelming outpouring of support. I mean, I was blown away by how much support I get from the wonderful people in Santa Cruz. And so my question is, who are the police protecting? If the public loves what I do, are we saying that basically the police don't like me?
Well, the Downtown Association, the Downtown Neighbors, the conservative residential groups, and the current city council, not to mention Dick Wilson, the city manager, are probably culprits in this whole thing indirectly, if not directly. Anyway, I hope to maybe I'll see you tomorrow downtown, Mr. TB. I know I'm going to be at Craig Canada's trial at 2:30 in Department 1, and then I may wander on downtown to see if I can drop off to sleep, or maybe even not. Maybe I'll be woken up by your presentation. I hope you raise issues like this on your TV shows.
Okay, and I certainly do. And thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you, sir. All right. One last question: is there a website people can go to? I guess we'll catch you later on that issue. Should have asked him that sooner. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, FreakRadio.org. Here's the rest of the census interview I was having with Tony. Again, my apologies for the bad sound quality.
Let's say in places like the Poganip, or up in the wilds.
They don't have street maps out there at Poganip. I mean, how can you know? Third street,
well, it's straight to the left.
Yeah, you know, down the railroad track about 500 paces, you know, turn right and go the eucalyptus log that fell down, and watch the, you know, the hidden needles.
That's the dark pond.
Yeah, yeah, and then you know the pile of trash over there. That's, you know, that's where everything goes. So.
Indeed. So, any final comments about the census? Would you feel it was a worthwhile activity? Do you feel it was bullshit? Or what do you think?
Total bullshit, you know. I think the government's just getting funding for something that they have no idea about, and they're using it for fucking shit that it's just not even useful for. They're asking money just to fucking, you know, on a budget, big basis. And they do nothing fucking with it but build shelters for no couples ever. No couples, not a married couple without kids that are just basically have no fucking refunds or no resources at all.
We
had nothing, you know, because we were together. We had no benefit, no anything. We couldn't even do anything. We couldn't go on a group together. The only thing we could go to is to armory, but there's no resources for us as a regular couple that has no kids, has no nothing, just wants to work.
What kind of resources do you want, Mr. Sponge Out the Public?
Shit, you know, something where we can benefit ourselves, you know, each other, you know, having to do it separately, and then, you know, it's just...
Separate but equal. It's a tradition in the South. I don't see what your problem is, son.
Yeah, so it's, you know, bigamy in fucking Utah, but it don't matter.
So we've been talking with...
What?
Your name again.
I forgot.
Oh. Well, thank you very much, Tony. I appreciate the insight into the applied hoodie-wetsa-voodoo research that gave us the homeless census, which was described in the Sentinel and can be found on the website. If you go for homeless census, Santa Cruz, I think it's Applied Research Group, something to that effect. Thanks again.
Yeah, no problem.
The name of the website is AppliedSurveyResearch.com, for those of you who want to actually look up some of the methodology. You say, Tony, there was a peculiar process of who chose what area to go into, and you were somewhat critical of?
Yeah, they asked us just, like, you know, to come up and raise your hand and try to get, because they offered areas, and when the area came up, they tried to say, okay, whoever's most familiar with this area should take the volunteer through there.
Right.
When that came up, areas that I was most, and my wife was most familiar with more than anybody, were taken by two other people that just got there just this year. I mean, they don't even come to county.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, they have no idea. You know, they just moved in there. They got one little area. They have no idea. They're not going to get any type of accurate count of where, who, and how many people are going to be in this. And Pogo Nip is huge. You know, and me and my wife were there for 6 years. You know, homeless. It's like...
And who made these decisions?
But it was basically the people that ran the census thing. They agreed with whoever came up and said that without any debate about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know, they couldn't argue with them. It was like, how are they going to know? But, you know, that's why I'm wondering how they're going to get an accurate count for the budget or anything if these people don't know anything about it, you know. It could be way, way less. You know, they don't have all the numbers. It could be five times as much if the people that lived in that area would do that area.
But you didn't check with these folks afterward to see if you think they made an accurate count based on your sense.
Well, I'm not going to go and do paperwork. Fuck that.
Typical, man. Typical. Get it together. Work harder and faster. Thank you, Tony.
It is now Wednesday, the 27th of July. No, we're June still. And we're down here on Pacific Avenue about 1 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. It is.
And we're in front of the Calipone. It is a rather large serape, or actually a blanket of uncertain origin, but very colorful, laid out on the street here or the sidewalk. And on it is, in a somewhat yogaistic posture, flouting conventional norms, but not very much, is the infamous, the Bami Swami, as I call him, or perhaps simply, how would you characterize yourself?
Well, you know, I've just today gotten a new title. It's the Dharma Hippie, so I find quite admirable.
D.H., Dharma Hippie, I like that. So, D.H., you say that you have not been seen on the sidewalk lately because you've been in a period of what?
Recuperation, basically. I've been working really hard doing stuff here on the streets and getting prepared for greater spiritual heights. And I just needed to take a few days off to recuperate because all this stuff is really hard on the body, you know. So I needed to get some sleep and catch up on doing some healing on various areas of my body. And so
I know that you had a sprained shoulder and you had some kind of sprain. You also had poison oak, and then you had the encounter with the "we've got your marijuana pipe, ha ha ha" police officer.
Well, yeah, there was all of that. Yeah, there was certainly a lot of emotional strain going on as well that I needed to take a recuperation from. As a matter of fact, I'm still suffering from this. It's actually an elbow strain that I suffered, which makes it difficult to play the guitar for extended periods of time, which I do anyway.
Straining your elbow still further.
Yes, yes.
And that's allowing for, again, a sympathy vote from the, oh dear, why is Swami's elbow strained? Well, because he's continuing to strain it crowd.
Well, no, because I'm making money that way. If people would just bring by a buck every day time they see me, you know, and I wouldn't have to play guitar to make money.
So you're hoping that people will stand up and support your spiritual activities, sparing your elbow and your wallet.
Yeah.
Or possibly your stomach.
Well, you know, I only eat what food is offered to me, so money is not going to make any difference on that score. But, you know, I think of things this way. You know, whenever I go to a church or a temple or something, I leave a dollar or two or sometimes whatever change I have before leaving in appreciation for the space being there.
You know, I got to tell you, I've been in many churches and temples, and I have never in my life left a cent at such a joint. Does this mean I'm not going to heaven? I don't like the sound of that.
Well, that depends entirely upon your interpretation of Scripture, I would have to say. But in actuality, it won't make a bit of difference. But
are you saying that the people's failure to support you will make no difference in their own individual salvation?
Ultimately, no, but it would help them in the short term, because it is by giving that we're opened up to receive.
But isn't it said by someone like Peter Weiss in the famous play The Marat Sad that when the wealthy individual bends down to give a dollar to the beggar, he throbs with contempt and also a form of self-approbation. He's such a wonderful guy for giving a pittance to a poor man on the street. Is this really a healthy thing to encourage?
In giving to the ordinary bum on the street, you know, that would probably not be a good thing to encourage. No. However,
you're an extraordinary bum on the street.
I am a holy man. A professional holy man.
Well, as distinguished from the unholy bums.
As distinguished from the unprofessional holy bums.
The amateur holy men?
Aye. So,
but, I like the way you say that, by the way. Are you have some sort of nautical background there?
Aye.
Like that. Or perhaps you're some part of a parliamentary group.
Actually, I go back and forth between saying I, which is, you know, sailor talk, and hi, which is Japanese, both of which mean yes.
Or perhaps you're some sort of unrepentant egotist who's always saying I, or me.
There is that as well.
Anything you've seen on the street today, how long you've been out here?
Well, now that brings up a very interesting point. Today is the 27th, which marks 11 months that I've been here on this spot, officially.
And you still haven't made enough to buy a house, correct?
That is correct.
Or to rent a room, for that matter.
That is also correct.
Or even to pay the fine on your marijuana ticket.
Oh, we have other things we're going to do about that.
Make a note, officer. So, 27th, this is the 27th, the 11th month, you said?
Yes, this is the 11th month of my being here on the blanket in front of the Palomar Inn in Santa Cruz. This Friday marks the 1-year anniversary of my doing the Dharma blanket anywhere.
Now, by doing the Dharma blanket, are you distinguishing your previous spiritual career of, you know, providing free spiritual services from your most recent...
God bless you.
I get it.
Team up with your partner... And instead of creating a, I don't want to say money-making enterprise, but certainly one which has both mixed spiritual and financial aspects.
I'm not quite sure what you're asking there.
How long have you been codging money from the innocent public in the more mechanistic way, which I've observed for the last 2 months?
Well, you know, I've been a professional rock and roll musician for many years before being on the blanket.
As a holy man, let me clarify.
Oh, that. You know, as a holy man, I don't ask for anything. When I'm asking, I'm not being all that holy. You guys should remind me that I'm not being
holy.
There
are holes in your holiness. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. You know, the key word in the phrase holy man is man.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you, Swami. I see you have a man who's seeking your counsel.
Yeah, well, I guess I better get to work then. God bless you all.
And thank you, Swami. Well, now we're talking to a musician who I haven't heard play recently, but you are...
I play at night. I don't play out during the daytime anymore, hardly.
Your name, sir?
C.J. Stock.
You're doing your usual educational reading, boning up on history and philosophy, the deeper works.
Mm-hmm.
But you say there's a sweep on?
There's been more cops in town this morning than I've ever seen.
Sure.
I'm there everywhere.
Now, you're seated on a bench outside Rosie McCann's.
And I'm just watching. You know, I'm not doing nothing wrong, so they leave me alone, I hope. But, I've seen they're looking for somebody, I think. I'm not sure. But there's been a really concentration.
Sort of a talent search.
Right.
I see you have your coat, your backpack, your guitar with you. Does this mean that you are ready to move on at any time?
Of course. That would be logical.
Now, are you still to be seen or to be heard, I should say, occasionally playing in the parking garage illegally across from the...
I got a great gift from the city council. They told them to leave me alone.
Well, actually, I was told by... I think I was told by Jim Burns, who's Matt Farrell's Public Works Department employee replacement, that the so-called free speech zone was going to be where you are. But that's for giving away flyers, not lingering and loitering with a guitar.
No, I'm performing. I'm working. And they know that. I hope they know that anyhow, because I don't do anything wrong. Matter of fact, I do more good than I do any kind of harm. Some of the waitresses...
Can you prove that?
Yeah. Some of the waitresses at Clouds, I escort them to their cars sometimes.
And then what do you do with them?
I let them get in their car and go home.
Can't you show a little more initiative here?
I don't need to. This is, initiative is not always necessary.
I see. Well...
A gentleman just looked at me and walked past them when they were talking. He said, the people that think too much of themselves eventually go crazy.
Or they become president.
That's the truth.
Thank you very much, CJ, and may the police not be with you.
I hope so.
April 4th, 2007, here at the Huff meeting outside the county building, talking with
Albert McDaniel.
And Albert, you just showed me a homeless service center to whom it may concern, suggesting to the court that they got no space there, signed by Tia Meyer. She apparently told you something when she gave you this. What did she say to you?
That should be hold up in court depending on the judge to get it dismissed. That particular ticket was dismissed.
For sleeping?
That is for sleeping outdoors. And it was first the judge says, no, we cannot dismiss that. The court of clerks says, yes, the... someone with the commissioner, someone with the police department says, yes, with that letter, they would dismiss it, which they did. I went back.
Did the police dismiss it or did the judge dismiss it?
The judge did dismiss
it. Judge, one in the basement, Kim Basket?
It was room 60, but it was Sullivan. Uh-huh. And she was very nice about it, did dismiss that particular one. Uh-huh. I went back to Tia, trying to find housing, et cetera, Tia Myers at the shelter. Uh-huh. And she had informed me, I said, well, if I can't get shelter, could I get another letter updating, yes, I have applied. Her response was, it would not do you any good because the county of Santa Cruz only recognizes one ticket or one letter per year on dismissing the ticket for camping.
And so was that simply her understanding and her advice, or did she just say to you, I won't give you any more letters?
No, it sounded very clear that she was schooled on that and quite knowledgeable that that's all they're accepting is one.
Did she say she wouldn't give you any more letters?
She did not say she would not give, but she said it would not do any good if I was to get another camping ticket.
Yeah, she's wrong. Anytime you bring in a letter, it's evidence of, you know. As far as I know, I mean, it's the first I've heard of this so-called once-a-year stuff. I mean, maybe it's true in a new policy, but it's not been the case.
My intention was this particular letter was written for April 4/1907, and I was trying to keep on me, which the judge had recommended to have an update letter in the...
And actually, it was an interview with Al, who's volunteered to be one of the plaintiffs in the sleeping ban lawsuit. We now have about 7 or 8 plaintiffs, people who've come forward and said, we're homeless, we're being harassed at night, we have no legal place to sleep, and we want the courts to intervene and stop the police from arresting us and citing us and invading and making us be afraid at night. And stopping us from getting work during the day because our sleep is interrupted, disturbing our health, and so forth. We're going to be getting more of those kinds of testimonial specifics from people and people who want to join this lawsuit when we go back to the Bookshop Santa Cruz sidewalk area on Sunday at 2 o'clock, and we invite you to join us there. Come on down. I'll be doing a radio show from 9:30 to 1 o'clock, and then I'll be coming down to this sidewalk protest and signature gathering. We're also protesting the position and behavior of the vice mayor, Ryan Coonerty, who works at the Bookshop Santa Cruz and whose father owns the place. and who poses as a constitutional attorney or teacher on law, constitutional law. I'm not quite sure what kind of law he practices. You're tuned to Free Radio, 427-3772. I'm going to do a quick blurb from the protest last Sunday, the tabling last Sunday, the kind of people who spoke to us and whom we spoke to. And you'll get a sense of what you may be in for next Sunday if you show up on the 8th of July. No, it's the 8th of July. You can check it out. And then I'll play a teeny bit of the E3 Playhouse tape, which I hope to play more of either this coming Sunday right in the morning show when I come back between 9:30 and 11:30. Maybe even Thomas Levitt may play some of it on the wake-up call. We'll see if that happens. Here's a little of the last week's protest dialogue, discussion, and interviews.
We're talking with
Robert Ackerley.
And Robert, you're telling me that the folks who were critical of, they say, the Bratton management, Larry and others, were not really doing what they needed to do with the place? Veterans Hall?
This is a discussion of the Veterans Hall controversy. Robert is going to be throwing a shindig for the veterans and for homeless people at the beginning of September, and he takes a special interest in this issue. And also the problems at the Veterans Hall, which we've talked about on the station before.
Disabled American veterans, PTSD 100%, that's mental. Tim is a civilian.
Tim Bratton,
and he's actually getting free yoga classes, getting his friends to have free yoga classes and changing, taking them from one guy to another. So that guy's not very respectful to veterans. And the other guys down there that got the bunker and are doing this ceaseless fight, once they get this, they actually don't do anything. So they're creating a ploy over at the Loudon Nelson Center that they have to go over there, and they have a select group of people, but they don't want anybody else in that, and they're saying that they can't do it at the Vets Hall, but when in actuality, we can do whatever we want over there. So what I'm doing is I'm going to put on a music event and a speaking event for peace, for world peace. You know, right now during this Summer of Love, we'll be probably from 7 till 10 at night, and we'll have an open microphone down the Vets Hall, and so come and speak your piece or play your tune, and we'll be filming it for community TV too. So we're going to try to make that so that not only the vets but the community at large can have a voice in our community. And being as if the community and all these city people are special interest groups for car lots and more concrete. I've been here for 60 years, and it's sickening what these people have done. They need to get out of our offices. We have to go down there and remove them, because what you vote for is we don't know if we're actually getting our counts counted or whatever. This whole thing needs to be taken from the people we have that are administrating justice. We got to get rid of them before we can clean up all the rest of the streets.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Keep up the good work.
All right. So, we have two people talking about homeless issues in other cities. Your name?
Alfred Anthony.
And?
Doc Waite.
And, Doc, you're... Well, who should we begin with? Let's talk about Dignity Village. Who wants to begin talking about that?
I guess I can.
Portland, Oregon. By the way, it's about 4:05 on July 1st, 2007, in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz.
I lived in Dignity Village about a year and a half before I come down to Santa Cruz. I enjoyed it in Dignity Village. It was...
How open was it? Dignity Village, of course, is a homeless-run encampment, which only includes about, 40 or 50 homeless people.
The maximum they're allowed to have in the summertime is 60 people. The maximum throughout the winter is up to 90.
But, of course, there are hundreds and hundreds of homeless people in Portland. What do the rest of them do?
They sleep wherever they can.
Now, when did you last spend time in Portland?
I come down here to Santa Cruz in March of last year. I was at Dignity Village until that time.
So, was the Wicks decision still in force? Were the police arresting people for sleeping in Portland, Oregon, outside Dignity Village? I mean, because wasn't there a decision in 2000 which prompted Street Roots, the newspaper, to help form Dignity Village? And I guess you say it began under the Who's Who What's This Bridge?
The Fremont Bridge in downtown Portland, and for the first 2 or 3 years, they moved them around to different places until the city finally gave Dignity Village some property. Well, actually, leased them some property for, I believe it was $2,000 a month.
So what about the Wicks decision that made it the camping, the sleeping portions of the camp? Actually, it was the entire camping ordinance illegal. Wicks and his son were found, you know, they couldn't arrest them for sleeping. Do they still arrest people for sleeping in Portland?
I'm not sure if they do or not. I know they still hassle a lot of them, but I don't know if they're arresting them or not.
Okay. Doc, you say you haven't got a lot of friendly words for Seattle's 10th City 4?
No. When I was there, it was run by a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, 10th City 4 is an outside open-air shelter somewhat similar to one in, well, perhaps based on the same principles as the one that was in Santa Cruz prior to Camp Paradise, which I mentioned earlier in the show. It was called the Back 40 or Coral Street Open Air Shelter. But the 10th City 4 in Seattle, Washington, was the fourth 10th city that homeless people, actually kind of social services and homeless people, combined to set up a tent city as a shelter for homeless people because they didn't have adequate indoor shelter resources. We sought this kind of thing in Santa Cruz, too, but I don't think it was entirely homeless run. We'll hear some more from Doc, and we're actually winding down, so if anybody has anything they want to say in terms of calling into the show, like whatever, give a call, 427-3772. If you don't, I encourage you to come on down to the Craig Canada trial tomorrow at 2:30 when it will be resuming. We've heard the prosecution. Now we get to hear the defense, and we get to see what Judge Deneen Guy does. And then on Sunday, there will be another protest at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and also 10 o'clock in the morning. If you want to hear a debate on free radio, you will, assuming both the participants show up. I think Jillian will, and Mike Rotkin has been pretty good about making his appointments on the radio. We'll see how he does this time.
How so?
Well, certain people were allowed to go through the donations before it made it out to the general public, and just a bunch of idiots running it. They didn't know what they were doing.
Now, here in Santa Cruz, you've reported some unusual behavior by police, or perhaps not unusual, but unfortunate.
Yeah, right now they're Rangers are hiring a bunch of people from Labor Ready to go up and ransack homeless camps and take them all out, steal all their stuff.
How do you know this is happening? I mean, you're not on the inside track. You haven't been hired.
No, but you can see it going on when it's in front of you and everybody knows it. It's a big topic right now. If you go down to Coral Street Shelter and ask all them people, that all their belongings got taken.
And when was the last time such a sweep happened?
It's happening right now.
And are people being given time to take their property? Is it being offered for storage, or is it just being destroyed?
Just being thrown away. I don't know if they've been told to leave or not, but I know they're up there. They got a big dumpster and everything else. And if you go through the garbage cans up there, going after recyclables like cans and bottles, you get a ticket for theft of recycling just going through a garbage can. I know, because I got to deal with one.
How much is the fine for that ticket, you know?
I'm not sure. I think it's like $285 or something like that. Might be less.
Who gave you that ticket?
Mr. Wallace, Ranger.
The homeless man's friend?
Yeah, I wouldn't call him that. But I was walking through. It's about 10:30. I was there just before everything started closing down. There's a lot of kids and stuff. I'm not going to walk up and start picking garbage, you know, through garbage cans in front of kids. I just wait until it clears out, and then I was going to pick up some. I'm a diabetic. I need to eat properly. And if I don't get work, which I'm chasing all day long, and if I don't...
What kind of work?
I do all kinds of work. I do gardening, landscaping. Monday I start a job for tree topping and clearing trees.
You say that the Homeless Service Center does not accommodate your work schedule and the ISSP program similarly doesn't?
No. Start work at 7. I get off between 6:30 and 7. All the places that feed, they're closed down, and all the places that you need showers, you go down to Coral Street, they're closed. Now they run everybody out of there at 10 o'clock, and they don't reopen until 4.
10 o'clock in the afternoon, in the morning, and don't reopen until 4 in the afternoon?
Yeah. And their food, man, they get all this money, millions and millions of dollars on our behalf, but yet they can't feed you properly. I can't eat their food and take my medicine because it's not enough. You average about 500 to 800 calories.
So what's an example of a typical meal?
One fried egg, 4 strawberries, and a bowl of cereal, and a cup of coffee.
And for dinner?
For dinner, if you're lucky, it'll be cold. I don't know. It's not food.
Now, what does it look like?
I find better things out of the garbage can.
So what would an ordinary person say that the meal was, or what do they claim it is?
They say it's food, but I don't know. They don't serve very well. The only really way to experience it is come down to the bay, sit down there, don't tell them who you are, just be homeless for a day, and come down and look what we have to deal with. Follow me for a day, and I'll show you. We'll go to work hard, come try to get a shower. I had to take a shower down at the beach.
Because
today, weekends, Saturday and Sundays, this Coral Street is closed. You cannot take showers. You cannot...
have dinner?
Well, they don't even have dinner anymore on weekends. You get breakfast.
Any other comments on how police are treating people in Santa Cruz that you've noticed?
I was sitting on a sidewalk, minding my business, reading a book because my feet are all tore up. Bad.
And you're showing me some serious calluses and blisters on your left foot.
Am I right?
And you're right.
My feet are tore up. They were sore, so I sat down. I wasn't by no building. I wasn't hurting nothing. They told me I couldn't sit there because it was improper seating. I was just sitting on the ground.
And you say they also told someone who was squatting that that was illegal?
Yeah, he couldn't even squat. He wasn't even sitting. He was just squatting there, and they say it was illegal to sit there.
Thank you, Doc. Anything else?
Well, you know, the shelter gets all this money, okay? It just doesn't make sense when you ask for a razor, they can't give you a razor. They're saying they don't make money. Well, I heard through the grapevine, which a lot of people, they don't understand all my connections, but we're not getting into that because that's my personal business. But they were given 4 point some million dollars already for this year. And it ain't even half a year yet. And there's nothing showing there.
I can't rush for those figures, but go ahead.
There's nothing, all the money's gone through there. The building is run down. They just got a grant, too, for a bunch of money that was just...
To refit the bay so they can eliminate the ISSP program and put in, I guess, 60 beds or something.
Yeah, but how's that going to work? I mean, they need to work around a working man's schedule. You know, I work. I don't go around. I don't get food stamps. I don't get any of that stuff. I've always worked when I come here. But what's hard is when your stuff is missing, you got the Rangers giving you tickets, you get a ticket sleeping on the ground, and it's just, it's a pain in the butt, basically. I mean, you're trying to keep a job, but they don't want you to keep your job because they want to keep you down.
Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome.
Keep those reports coming in.
I will.
And we understand that you have a friend with a camera who's going to keep an eye on the Pogonip stuff.
Yep.
Watch out, Rangers.
And that's the kind of interviewing we'll be doing on Sunday at the Homeless Service Center. I'm sorry, at in front of Coonerty's Non-Service Center, the Bookshop Santa Cruz, where the hoi polloi don't get to floy, but they, those with money buy books and leave and patronize a bookstore whose owner is a powerful supervisor, formerly a mayor, who's responsible for some of the most, the strongest anti-homeless legislation in the state in the downtown area, the downtown ordinances, and a longtime supporter of the sleeping ban, and whose son, Ryan Coonerty, is the vice mayor at the current time, and who also favors keeping a sleeping ban in place, even though there's shelter tonight for less than 5% of the homeless population. I've got other new stuff, but I suggest you go to indiebay.org to read about it. You can read about this Coonerty protest. You can read about Assemblyman John Laird backing the Bush buildup. He supported the bill AB 221 in the Assembly, which essentially supports the war cries on Iran. It doesn't do so by calling for war, but it disinvests funding from Iranian investments until such time as the State Department says that they're removing Iran from the terrorist list and from when the president determines that Iran has ceased its efforts to design, develop, manufacture, or acquire a nuclear explosive device. So it's okay for the U.S. to have it and all the countries around Iran to have it. Ranging Pakistan's okay. India can have a nuclear weapon. It's okay if Israel has it. Russia's fine. But let Iran try to develop one, and they're going to try to starve them out, or I should say embargo them out. And Assemblyman Laird, your Santa Cruz liberal, is voting for this stuff in the state legislature. Anyway, that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. I'll be in court tomorrow with checking out the Craig Canada case. Might show up at the Human Rights Organization at 2 o'clock on Saturday at the Wired Wash Cafe looking for sleeping ban lawsuit plaintiffs. And on Sunday, I'll be back here in the morning. Special debate with Rotkin and Greensight on the fudging of the rape stats. Is the police department being allowed to cover up its own incompetence and not getting appropriate direction from the city council? And then, of course, a protest that afternoon and some tabling in support of a lawsuit to restore civil rights to homeless people and, again, the basic right to sleep. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. If you want to call me between times, do so. 423-HUFF is my number, 423-HUFF, or go to www.huffsantacruz.org. That's the website. Hey, see you tomorrow, Saturday or Sunday, or maybe just around town.
Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. I just carried two huge boxes of records into the studio. So I'm very out of breath. It's no wonder people came out with CDs at some point, hauling records around. It's quite a workout. Anyway, thanks, Robert. Thanks for getting out of the way here very quickly and efficiently. That was a first. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, Robert. Just joking around, bud. It's time for From the Cream to the Dregs. And as soon as I get done cleaning up after Robert Norse, who's not in here to defend himself, but we'll be back soon to get the rest of his stuff and probably five more trips. Anyway, Uncle Dennis is out of town this evening. He'll be back next Thursday. And my name is George. I normally host a talk show on the station, but I'm sitting in just to cover Dennis's music show this evening. And Dennis plays music from the 60s and 70s. Usually, and I forget his exact description, but I know that he has an emphasis on, I don't know, kind of like older rock and roll, I think. So anyway, I went through my garage and I found every single album I could find in an hour that was from the 60s or 70s, and it's not all along the lines of what Dennis would play. But I'm kind of going to do a random show, and it's all going to be vinyl, unless somebody requests something on a CD, then it's all going to be vinyl, and except this that you're hearing now, which is Funkadelic Maggot Brain, is not, it's a CD. And actually, after this next song will be all vinyl. This one, this next one that I'm going to play is from a Jimmy Cliff CD that I believe came out in 1973. We're going to hear that next. If you have any requests, you can call in here at 427-3772. That's in the 831 area code, 427-3772. And I can't guarantee I'll be able to fill it. We have a very limited music library here, and I have a very random selection of records. And I do have the combination to Uncle Dennis's secret combo to his record vault, so he might have something. We'll do our best to fill the request if you have one. Otherwise, I'm just going to play weird, random music from the 60s and 70s, and there might be some familiar songs in there, too. But if you want to hear anything in particular, call in 427-3772.
Well, I guess I have to
You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try. You'll succeed at last. You must bear. Win and lose, you've got to get your share. Got your mind set on a dream. You can get it, no heart in the seam now. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try. Succeed at last. I know it.
Listen.
Rome was not built in a day. Opposition will come your way. But the harder the battle you see, it's the sweeter the victory. See that?